Welcome to Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. I'm Kate Burdett. The Ohio Health Cap City Half Marathon is happening soon. We'll get a preview of the race. The JDRF One Walk is also coming up. We'll hear more about that event, supporting a very important cause. And we'll hear from a fitness professional with insight on how to get physically ready for spring and summer activities. Plus, Doug Petcash of Face the State will have a look at state politics. First up on Columbus Perspective, it's that time of year. You're going to see a lot of people out running, and on April 27th, you're going to see quite a few people running in Columbus because it is time for the annual Ohio Health Capital City Half and Quarter Marathon. They also have a 5K. We're going to get into all of that right now with David Babner, the founder of the Cap City Half. Hi, David. Thanks for being with us again.
Yeah. Hi, Kate. So thank you for having me.
So exciting times. April 27th, the Ohio Health Capital City Half and Quarter Marathon and 5K. Tell me about that day.
Well, it's an amazing celebration of the healthy, active lifestyle for our city. You know, we've always known that we've got one of the best cities in the country, the best sports city in the country, and now have been recognized as one of the best half marathons in the country by USA Today, which was a pretty amazing honor that we just heard about in the last week or two. But it's really all about the running and walking community in Columbus. We'll have almost 11,000 participants will be out there, about 1,000 volunteers. We'll have a number of bands and DJs, 20 different bands and DJs out on the course. We call it the best tour of Columbus on 2 feet. As you mentioned, it's incredibly accessible to all. We have the half marathon, which is the signature distance, the quarter marathon that you mentioned, and we've got the Columbus Promise 5K, which is a partnership between us and the Columbus Promise program to raise some funds and raise some awareness about what's going on over at Columbus Promise, helping to send some Columbus public school students to Columbus State at no charge. So it's over the 21 years, the event's grown into really the kickoff of spring here in Columbus, and we couldn't be more proud to be part of it.
It's true. It really is kind of a landmark in the calendar when you see this event coming up. It's like, okay, spring is here. Let's do this.
Absolutely.
And you bring in participants not just from around Ohio and not just from around the country, but from around the world, don't you?
We do. We do. We've over the last few years. So in 2016 and 2017, we were honored to partner with the Greater Columbus Sports Commission and Experience Columbus and the City of Columbus and Franklin County and bring in host the 2016 and 2017 U.S. Half Marathon National Championships. And that really gave Cap City a large national reputation and as you mentioned, international reputation. And we've got folks that come in, running groups that'll come in from all over the country. There's a large group that comes in from Canada. And they started coming about 10 years ago and they've been coming ever since. And so excited to have folks here. I mean, being a resident of Columbus, to bring people here and show off our great city is what this is all about. And I mentioned our running and walking community. We've got one of the best in the country, is one of the most vibrant. It's a very accessible running and walking city. And for us to be able to host everybody in this event and show them the best tour of Columbus with our course, we're just excited to have them here.
Absolutely. I love that you call this the best tour of Columbus on 2 feet, because there really is a lot to see. And it seems like more and more every day we hear about new things happening all around the central Ohio area, specifically downtown Columbus. And what a great opportunity on an April day to, you know, take a little stroll or jog through the capital city. Tell me a little bit about the route of the half marathon, since we are talking about touring Columbus.
Sure. So we start right at there in the Columbus Commons. So right outside the Columbus Commons on the corner of Town and High Street, that's where our start line and finish line is. We head off south towards German Village, get a nice tour of Schiller Park and German Village, head back up around after we come out of German Village, we'll come up 4th Street and then we'll end up on High Street. And the folks will get an opportunity to run High Street all the way up to campus. So if you haven't had a chance to be on High Street in a while, especially with all the new shops and restaurants and buildings that have gone up, it's really a great place to see and tour. Then I mentioned campus. They'll actually run around the horseshoe up there at Ohio Stadium, run around there, run around campus a little bit, come back down Neal Avenue. So you get kind of the commercial side on High Street, some more of the residential side on Neal, before making your way around the North Market and back out to High Street and then to the finish line right there at the Columbus Commons again.
You know, when you describe it like that, of course, I think I'm probably imagining doing it in a vehicle. It doesn't sound like it's that long.
It does sound a little short until you realize how long you're on High Street and Neal and what those stretches are. By the time you hit in the half marathon, by the time you hit Ohio State University, you're about 8.5 miles in.
Okay.
And the quarter marathon's a great tour of Columbus as well. Obviously, half the distance. We say half the distance, all the fun. but it's you get all of the first part of the course, and then you loop around. You actually do get to loop the North Market and come back out onto High Street and come back down. So it's great. And the Columbus Promise 5K is a piece of it as well. So it's just a great accessible event for everybody. We hire people to finish last. No one will ever finish last in any M3S sports event.
Oh, wow.
And so we try to make everybody feel comfortable. We encourage running, walking, any which way you want to participate, come on out. We always encourage people to come volunteer if they've never seen an event like this. Come out and be part of it. It really is the kickoff of spring in our great city.
Absolutely. David Babner is the founder of MS3 Sports and the Ohio Health Capital City Half Marathon, which includes also a quarter marathon and a 5K, something for everyone. He likes to call it a celebration of a healthy lifestyle. And I think that's a great way to describe this. Anyone really could start out with that 5K, walk or run it, and, you know, get that experience in. It really is taking that first step. It can be so intimidating, I think, sometimes for people to say, well, I could never run a 5K or let alone, you know, a half marathon. But everyone starts somewhere, don't they, David?
They certainly do. And we have on our website, and we've got a number of training programs that Ohio Health has created for us, from couch to 5K to an advanced half marathon training. There's a program for everyone. And one of the most humbling experiences for me at every one of these 21 Ohio Health Capital City half marathons that we've produced, I stand at the start line and I stand at the finish line and I greet these athletes. And to see, I've seen a number of them who have done the 5K and then they've graduated up to the quarter marathon and now they've done the half marathon for the last 10 years. Or I see them at one of our four milers or other events throughout the year. And they're saying, no, this is the year I'm going to do the quarter and then I'm going to do the half. So they come out and it really is it's an event that it is for everyone. We have tremendous finisher medals for everybody. So whether you're first or you're one of our final finishers, everybody gets a great medal to bring home to show off to family and friends and wear to the office the next day. And it's really a great it's a great celebration.
It's funny you mentioned that. I have a friend who firmly believes, and this is an adult, that if you win a medal or a trophy for some athletic feat like this, you are required to take it everywhere with you for 24 hours to show it off.
Absolutely. And we tell our participants from out of state who are flying in, you know, wear it in the airport and have that security buzzer go off so that you can, oh, it must be my big finisher medal here. I'm sorry. I forgot to take that off.
Oops. Exactly. Yeah. You deserve those accolades because it's a big goal to set and to achieve. And there's still time. If anyone wants to get involved in the Ohio Health Capital City Half Marathon on Saturday, April 27th. It's a really difficult website to remember, capitalcityhalfmarathon.com. That's where you go for all the information. And as David mentioned, they also are looking for volunteers to help. They could not put on a race with more than 11,000 participants without the help of volunteers. So check out their website. And David, before we finish today, is there anything else we didn't touch on?
Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that I think one of the reasons that we were voted as one of the best half marathons in the entire country, yes, it's the course, Yes, it's the volunteers. Yes, it's all the entertainment on course. Yes, it's the experience starting off when you get here. But we have the best post-race party in the entire country. We have the North to Nashville concert kicks off at 9 o'clock right in the Columbus Commons. Jet's Pizza is there. Every participant will get Jet's Pizza. Rooster's Wings is giving out wings. A partnership between Teremana Tequila and Condado restaurants in town are creating a big Margaritaville for everyone. Mum Champagne will be there giving everybody a glass to celebrate with. We'll have a number of non-alcoholic options as well, like White Claw 0% and some other things there. But it is. It wouldn't be the celebration that we say it is without a tremendous post-race party. So we look forward to seeing everybody there on April 27th.
The Ohio Health Capital City Half Marathon. There's also a quarter and a 5K. So something for everyone. Saturday, April 27th. David Babner, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much for the time. We really appreciate it.
Columbus Perspective is a public affairs presentation of WBNS Radio. The opinions expressed on this program are those of its guests and do not necessarily reflect those of WBNS Radio, its staff, management, or sponsors.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. I'm Kate Burdett. Currently in America, 1.45 million people live with type 1 diabetes. The experts say by 2040, that number will be a lot higher. They think it'll be about 2.1 million. 50% of diagnoses of type 1 diabetes, and that's the important distinction here, used to be called a juvenile onset or insulin-dependent diabetes. Type 1 diabetes, now 50% of those diagnoses are adults, not children. But for anyone living with type 1 diabetes, it is something that can be a big burden and it can be a huge health concern. We're joined today by Christy Roby. She is the market director for JDRF Southern and Central Ohio. It's a big national organization and they're doing a lot of good in the type 1 diabetes space. And they have some fundraising events coming up that you're going to want to hear about. Hi, Christy. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Kate, thank you so much for having me.
So JDRF, your primary mission is what?
Improving the lives of those living with type 1 diabetes and finding a cure to end type 1 diabetes.
The organization has been around for many years. I know from personal experience with it. And right now they are gearing up for walk season. Here in Columbus, the JDRF One Walk is coming up next weekend on Saturday, the 28th. It'll be on the lawn at CAS right off Olentangy River Road at Ackerman. And they have a lot of activities planned for that day, not just the walking. And of course, all of the proceeds are to benefit this mission that we're talking about, improving the lives of those with type 1 diabetes and finding a cure for this disease. And I should mention, jdrf.org is the website where you go to get started. Christy, tell us about your walk on the 28th.
Absolutely. Thank you. So we're going to start the walk, as you said, at the lawn at CAS, which is right over by the Ohio State campus off of Olentangy River Road. We start the walk at 1 o'clock, but we'll start some fun activities starting as early as noon that is really fun for all ages. As you mentioned, the walk is only about a mile. It's around kind of a beautiful space there at CAS. But really the fun part is the sense of community and being there with others that are supporting you. It's kind of like your own little birthday that, you know, everyone's there to support you and you're not alone. But we have so many just different intergenerational activities planned.
Tell me about a few of those. Intergenerational gets my attention now. So.
Right? Exactly. Because we realized that, you know, when people would say, well, if we don't have young kids, well, guess what? We have a grandparent tent, a teen tent. If you're a new family to type 1, we have a tent for new families so that they can get more information and kind of get plugged in that area. But the fun stuff, we have inflatable games. We have an inflatable obstacle course. COSI is coming with an experiment station. Home Depot's coming with a building station. We have a 360 photo booth, mascots, superheroes, a DJ. You name it, we have a T1D parade that celebrates all of the different years that these people that are here have been celebrating their diversity, how long they've been living with type 1. So it really is just such a wonderful, fun atmosphere. you know, where again, people feel togetherness and camaraderie and that they're not alone.
I think that's so important with any kind of health issue or any kind of thing you're dealing with in life that can be challenging, is to find that community that supports you, to find those people you can talk to who have been through something that you're just facing for the first time. And it can be so scary. And I think that's wonderful how JDRF provides, not just, hey, we're going to put up some tents, do some stuff and go for a walk. Let's make sure that the people we're serving get what they need, you know, from their community.
Precisely. It's so important for especially new families, but even once you've been living with this disease for many years, or you were just diagnosed and you were an adult, we even have opportunities where you can join a team of other adults and, you know, get together at the event and get to know and kind of swap stories with other adults living with type one. So it is important. And we notice, you know, obviously when they first receive that diagnosis, especially, it's so scary and they have so many questions, and just being that connecting point is so vital.
And along those lines, it's not just a walk once a year here in Columbus. You have events and opportunities for engagement throughout the year for your constituents. Tell me a little bit more about the day-to-day of JDRF in Ohio.
The day-to-day of JDRF in Ohio is really all about kind of connecting. I think we're building a stronger community engagement program in which we are going to be looking at support groups, and we're going to be looking at many updates along the year about all of the different research that's being done and the progress. That's the exciting part. There's so much progress being made in the past few years. To be able to share that with people and give them that hope. So I think we're building a lot of that. As well as, you know, we have our gala, obviously. Ours is in the fall. It'll be October 19th over at Bridge Park in the Exchange. But we, our day-to-day truly is, we have an emerging leadership council. So we have, you know, those people all kind of getting together and how they take part in events. There's just so many different ways to engage. And so we really look at, you know, where people are in their T1D journey and how they want to engage.
Christy Roby is the market director for JDRF Southern and Central Ohio. That organization's focus is on improving the lives of people with type 1 diabetes, and they have a big goal of finding a cure for the disease. Around 50% of diagnoses of type 1 diabetes nowadays are actually in adults. It is not necessarily a juvenile onset disease, as it used to be called. And that research that is being done and being supported and promoted by an organization like JDRF is so important to find out not only why we've had this change in age of onset, but again, to find that cure for a disease which can really be impactful to one's life. Christy, I wanted to talk briefly, if we could, about the advocacy piece of JDRF and your activities. We've heard from state lawmakers recently about a new effort that is in the works to try to kind of lower or cap the cost of not only insulin for type 1 diabetics, but also of supplies that people need for continuous glucose monitors and things. I know JDRF works kind of in tandem. Tell me a little bit more about how the JDRF staff is involved in these things.
So our advocacy volunteer works with different legislators, and we have, for instance, a Promise to Remember Me campaign where we bring in families and say, this is what you're, you know, we need this funding for instance, for the special diabetes program, or if it is specifically for a bill that's trying to, you know, cap costs or even just lower the cost of insulin. We are always looking for ways in which we can be working at this from all angles in order to improve the lives of those living with type 1.
For those who may not be aware, because you don't have type 1 diabetes in anywhere in your life or in your family, it can be an extremely expensive disease to have. Yes. And to live with healthily. I will say personally, as someone who has lived with type 1 diabetes since I was 11 years old, that I found out the hard way during COVID unemployment and without health insurance, that my insulin, which I need to live, is $1,200 a month out of pocket. That's a number that when I tell people, that typically makes a jaw drop, because it's not an option. That's not a drug that I can say to my doctor, "Ooh, sorry, can't afford it." And they say, "Oh, we'll get to that later then." It's life or death. And this is one example of so many. It's something.
And it's unacceptable.
It is definitely a challenge for people with type 1 diabetes. We're hearing more and more. And of course, like I said, state lawmakers are at work. I know on the national level, too, we have legislators working on this. And sometimes it gets swept under the rug or it gets pushed away because there's more pressing matters. But for someone living every day with this disease that they do not have an option of curing right now, it can be a struggle, not only emotionally, not only physically, but financially. And so to have an organization like JDRF out there advocating, you know, talking to people in positions of power and in positions of power to make change is so important for this community.
And that goes hand in hand as well. We are pushing for clinical trials. We want people to be a part of clinical trials and get us that cure faster. So I think that that's, you know, another piece that goes kind of along with the advocacy of something that we're actively working on is really helping to push the pipeline of diversity. You know, basically, even if you have some of the biomarkers that you've tested positive for, they have studies for that just to be able to monitor those folks.
And speaking of which, screening for type 1 diabetes is very important. You may have symptoms that you're not even aware of.
The importance of that screening is you can't emphasize that enough. For one, in the past, people would say, well, what's the point? If I know I'm going to get it, then I'm just going to dread and I'm going to be working, you know, worrying about it. Well, now, since November of 22, we have the first disease modifying therapy that will change the course, delay the onset of full on type 1 diabetes, where you are insulin dependent for 3 to 5 plus possible years. So knowing will help you monitor whether you should be, looking closer at your numbers. It will help you to maybe look at that treatment. It's a 14-day infusion to help delay the onset for 3 to 5 years. But in all reality, it reduces your risk of diabetic ketoacidosis, which is when most people find out that they have type 1, and that is life-threatening. And when your every instance of diabetic ketoacidosis damages your body, it can damage your heart, it can damage your eyes, it can damage your kidneys. So we want to keep people out of that state.
And at some of the walks here in Ohio, screenings for type 1 diabetes will be available. Christy Roby from JDRF Southern and Central Ohio, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Kate.
Hi, this is Martina McBride. With online news, social media, and texting available 24/7, the world seems to be spinning faster and faster every day. And it can be overwhelming. Sometimes we just need to unplug and take a break from our electronic devices. It can help reduce stress and allow us to reflect on the things that are really important in our lives.
This message brought to you courtesy of the United States Air Force.
You're listening to Columbus Perspective on The Fan. I am Kate Burdett, Michaela Brock. She's the fitness manager at Mount Carmel Fitness Center in Lewis Center. As the weather gets nicer, I know many of us are itching to get outside and do more active things, whether it's yard work or maybe your favorite recreational sport. If you've had a period of being a little more sedentary because, you know, it was cold outside, this is a good time to remember to stretch and do other important things so you don't hurt yourself. Michaela, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, Kate, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
What would be the first piece of advice that you'd give to someone who maybe is coming off not being terribly active, but pretty excited to get out there and enjoy this nice weather?
The first thing I would say is have a positive intention, you know, and also realize that it's this new step you're taking is not temporary, that it's a lifestyle. So before you get started with any new journey, any new regimen, set in your mind that, hey, this is a brand new day. It's a brand new week. It's a brand new life for me. And I'm starting over today. So that way, if and when you do fall, backslide, or, you know, miss the mark, it's okay because there's always the next day. But get started on the next day. So the first thing, Kate, would definitely be positive and excited for the new journey that you're taking. And then as you're taking that journey, start to, again, like you mentioned, get outside. Or if you prefer indoor weather, it's totally fine.
Exactly.
Find somewhere where you enjoy going, where you can find activities that are fun for you and not just monotonous or, just not fun for you to continue to do.
So we all experience it this time of year. You get back to the office on Monday and, oh, I'm sore from raking the yard or from planting flowers, you know, all these things. Or maybe, hey, last summer I played in this softball league. I can't wait to do it again. But I think you made a really important point there that this is day one. You're going to start here and it's not necessarily going to be you're starting here and picking up where you left off 8 months ago or so, right?
Exactly. The body only takes 2 to 3 days to begin to atrophy. If you've heard or have not heard that term before, that's where the muscles begin to kind of reduce in size or ability. So if we stop moving after 2 or 3 days, our body is going to notice. So you have been sedentary for a while, it's okay. Again, today's a new day. That means it's a brand new day. It's a brand new opportunity to get started with something new.
2 to 3 days, that's remarkable. I had no idea it was that quick.
Yes, yes. So you can start to lose size and lose strength starting 2 to 3 days out. Yes.
What are some really basic and quick exercises that you would recommend to someone who is maybe coming off that period of being sedentary and concerned they may have experienced some atrophy?
You know, it's less about exercises as a particular thing and more about what is the routine or what is going to be the thing that works for you? Because if I tell you, you need to do burpees 30 times a day, you would hang up the phone, run away, walk away from me.
Yeah, that does not sound appealing at all.
It does not sound fun, right? But for someone that might really work. But for someone else, it might be, hey, start walking your dog or play with your grandkids. You know, or go to the pool or just be active. So there, contrary to the blogs and the things online, there's not a particular exercise that I would recommend that everybody just straight do outside of some form of cardio. That'll be the best place to start. So again, if you go to the pool and you start to swim a little bit, or even just start off with splashing around or get outside and go for a walk, it's all about what's going to be best for the body in a way that you actually enjoy. So here at the center, and I'm sure everywhere else in the gyms, there are plenty of cardio classes like kickboxing or aqua aerobics or body combat that people might be interested in outside of doing, you know, walking on the treadmill or things like that. Mm-hmm. So it's more about starting overall activity versus a, hey, everybody needs to squat this many times a day. It's more about the activity and beginning to get that heart rate up and the body moving and pumping.
So you're about to play your first 18 holes of golf this season. Maybe a few days ahead of that, try a walk around the neighborhood. Make sure that you remember how much movement you can handle before you get tired out.
Absolutely, because sometimes when we jump back into activities that we have not done for a while, we are setting ourselves up for an injury. So that golf swing might, you know, put you somewhere in the hospital where you might not want to be or cause you to have an injury if your body is not prepared for it. To prepare your body, again, start activities that you can do daily, like walking or dancing or being outside with the kids or, like you mentioned, raking leaves or cutting the grass. It's grass season nowadays. Mm-hmm. So start small and then we can start to add on and then add another layer. Maybe add some resistance bands, maybe add some weight. But the most important thing is get outside, go for a walk, go for a dance, go for a swim.
It's important to note that before undertaking any exercise program, you should consult with your doctor to make sure you don't have any underlying issues that could complicate things. But Michaela's making a great point. Michaela Brock with Mount Carmel Fitness Center in Lewis Center. And we're talking about getting ready for summer physically. When you talk about cardio, Michaela, of course, that is the goal of that is to raise the heart rate. That's kind of how that works, right? Are there any safety guidelines for people when they are, and you know, most of us have a fitness tracker of some sort, a watch or some type of wearable. Is there a heart rate zone or a formula that you can do based on your age, based on your level of activity that keeps you informed if you're getting your heart rate to a danger zone?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. It's a very loaded question. And thank you for that. That's awesome. So when we talk about heart rate zones, right, heart rate zones are a measure of 1 through 5 of how high someone should be working, right? If you look at you know, zone five is all out max intensity. Zone one would be, you know, you're out for a nice stroll or something very casual, or even sitting at the office. So very low. But it's hard to detail, am I at a one or am I at three? Like, it's hard to detail that without having a heart rate monitor or having a fitness tracker or having something that specifically tells you this is what your heart rate is and this is what your age is and creating that calculation. So what I try to do is make things simple for people without requiring the technology, without requiring the knowledge of exercise and fitness, is I want people to start utilizing their own body feel, their own body awareness. So if you feel like you are doing too much, then slow down. If you feel like you can do a little bit more, then go ahead and pick it up. So the most important thing that we have to understand is that our heart rate zones are different. Again, based on age, based on gender, based off of activity level, based off of medication. There are so many factors that play a role. So I can't just give a set number, you know? But again, the most important thing would be on a scale of 1 to 10, your personal 1 to 10. If 10 is you are running from lions, tigers, and bears, and one is you are hanging out at home with the kids, just relaxing on a Saturday morning, you want to start off with maybe a 5 to 6 if you are a beginner, right?
Okay.
So again, if one is laying at home relaxing and 10 is running for your life, you want to start out at a 5 or a 6 if you are a beginner. If you're a little bit more advanced than a beginner, then go 6 to 7. That will be a good place to start. That's where your body starts to sweat a little bit in that 7 realm, right? So again, the most important thing people can do is to be in tune with their body. We want them to have a mind-muscle connection, a mind-body connection, so that they are fully aware of how hard their body is pushing and not necessarily reliant on the numbers themselves.
That makes sense. No one knows your body better than you do. So how else to answer that? And that kind of helps me get to my next question, because if you know your body and you know you're supposed to be exercising, you should get some more activity into your life, but you are really having trouble motivating yourself. What are some tips that you can give to us to help us kind of feel that motivation? Because it is so easy to skip the gym if you really don't want to go.
Absolutely. Yeah. It is extremely difficult to rely on motivation. What I have learned, I've been a fitness professional for 18 years. I've worked with hundreds of clients and I've helped them lose thousands of pounds and rid themselves off of dozens of different medications. And in all of my experience, I have learned that motivation is a lie. It's a trick. Ooh. It's something that is not stable and consistent. So if we don't go to work based off of how we feel, we're not going to bring in that paycheck, right? But your bills don't care how you feel. The mortgage is still due. The electric bill is still due. The kids' daycare is still due, regardless of how you feel. So it's the same thing with health and fitness. Don't rely on a feeling, i.e. motivation, to dictate your actions and your efforts. It is better and more effective to rely on systems and processes or habits than it is the feeling. So if you have a habit of getting up and going to church on Sunday morning or Saturday or whatever day it may be, it's not based off of what you feel. It's the habit of doing it. That means it's going to be consistent regardless of your feeling. So start to create the habit of a healthy lifestyle, the habit of going to the gym or walking the dogs or playing with the kids or getting outside. Because once you get past that first initial hump, I don't want to, then it becomes, well, it'll still be nice. Well, it doesn't matter if I want to. I know this is going to be beneficial for my future. So one of the biggest things that I can advise people is motivation is a trick. It is a trap. It is a sand pit. It's a sinking sand pit where we often fall into the realm of, oh, I don't feel like it. And then that I don't feel like it for the day becomes the week, the month, the year. And then guess where we are? We're 50 pounds heavier. So don't worry about motivation. If you want to have a healthier lifestyle, create the habit and stick to the process of, I know I need to go to the gym, or go outside Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and I'm going to do this regardless.
That makes great sense. It really does when you break it down that way, because I mean, I know as well as anyone the mind games you can play, the excuse. You can find a million excuses when you don't want to do anything. And I think it really comes into play when it comes to that physical activity.
Yes, yes. That's why I started off in the beginning by saying you find something that works for you. Again, burpees might not work for everyone.
Right.
You know, maybe for you it's taking a spin class. Maybe for you it's going outside on the bike. Or again, setting that habit to walk the dogs before you leave for work and when you come back. So find that thing that you can enjoy, which makes it easier, a little bit more palatable to do it when you don't really feel like it, because it's not terrible. Right? You don't hate doing it.
Michaela Brock, fitness manager for Mount Carmel's Fitness Center in Lewis Center, where I know they do great things. She's already told us she's had so many clients that she's helped. Before we run out of time, did you have any final thoughts that you haven't shared with us yet?
The most important thing, again, is create the habit of success. Create the habit of a healthy lifestyle, including activity, healthy food. So if you want to be here longer and have a higher quality of life, just take a second look at what you're putting in your mouth and make sure that that lines up with your overall goals of health, wellness, gaining muscle, building bone mineral density, and losing a little bit of fat.
Wise words. Thank you so much for being with us today, Michaela.
Thanks, Kate. You too.
This is Columbus Perspective on the Fan. Now, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10 TV, here's Doug Petcash from the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10 TV.
Tragic fallout of the House Bill 6 First Energy scandal. One of the key figures in the state's largest bribery scandal has died in a suspected suicide. Sam Randazzo, the former chairman of the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, was found dead in Columbus. In November of 2020, Randazzo's home was raided by the FBI for taking millions in bribes from First Energy. He ended up resigning. Then, in December of 2023, Randazzo was indicted on 11 federal charges related to bribery and embezzlement. In February, he was indicted by a Summit County grand jury on 27 state charges. He had not yet gone to trial in either of those cases. Randazzo, along with former First Energy executives Chuck Jones and Michael Dowling, were all indicted recently in the House Bill 6 scandal. They all pleaded not guilty. And former House Speaker Larry Householder was charged last month on state charges, but he's already been convicted and is serving 20 years in prison on federal charges. Former Ohio GOP Chairman Matt Borges was also convicted and sentenced to 60 months in prison. Two other men took guilty pleas in 2020, but have not yet been sentenced. This is the second person involved in the House Bill 6 bribery scandal that has died by suicide. Neil Clark, a prominent lobbyist who was charged in the case, was found dead in Florida. He was charged with federal racketeering for accepting bribes. Now, if you or someone you know is having suicidal thoughts, call or text 988, the Suicide and Crisis Hotline. Someone is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to take your call. Turning back now to the State House, where Ohio Governor Mike DeWine delivered his annual State of the State address. It's his opportunity to talk about his accomplishments and to lay out his proposals for the coming months. He started by saying he wanted to talk about Ohio's future, which is Ohio's children. Then, over the 1 hour and 3 minute speech, he announced a few initiatives on child safety and health and how to help them succeed. Democrats liked some of what he said, but wanted more.
Kids have only one chance to grow up. So we must have a great sense of urgency, as every moment we waste is a moment that they lose.
That being said, Governor Mike DeWine then announced a new Child Care Choice Voucher program to give financial support for families of 8,000 more children to be able to access child care. Families earning up to 200% of the federal poverty level could qualify.
Doing so, we will build today's workforce by getting people back to work, and we will ensure that tomorrow's workforce is prepared for the demands that lie ahead.
Democrats hoped he would do more to help even more Ohio families.
But we need to be able to raise the eligibility for folks who can access some assistance with child care to make it affordable.
Republican Speaker of the House Jason Stevens said it comes down to funding.
This is the challenge when it comes to budgeting. And the numbers, as far as increasing the numbers and trying to do that, is what is that cost going to be?
The governor also proposed expanding the state's mobile response stabilization service to help children in a mental health crisis. He proposed an initiative to ensure every child who needs glasses gets them, and he called on the legislature to ban flavored tobacco products statewide and ban intoxicating hemp known as Delta 8.
Because of a loophole in the law, Delta 8 can be sold as hemp without the warning labels and age restrictions associated with marijuana.
But Democrats say he came up short on one major threat to Ohio's children.
Is that the number one killer of children in this state and in this country is guns. And the governor spent less than 1 minute on gun violence.
The governor wrapped up where he began, calling for action to help Ohio kids thrive.
This is our time to chart Ohio's path forward as we protect our most precious resource, our children.
Joining me now to discuss the State of the State address is Ohio Senate Majority Floor Leader Rob McCauley of Napoleon. Senator, thanks for being here today.
Happy to be here. Thanks, Doug.
First of all, what's your primary takeaway from the governor's address?
Well, the governor has always been somebody who's viewed children as a high priority of his. In fact, it might be the primary lens through which he governs. He's been somebody who's been fond of talking about his own grandfather planting trees and knowing that he may not be able to see those trees come to maturity in his life, but realizing he was making an investment in the future by doing so. And that's really primarily what the State of the State address, I felt, was a progress report on many of the early investments and many of the early policy changes that the governor made and that were funded by the legislature. Not a lot of legislative asks in there compared to previous State of the State addresses, but nevertheless, talked an awful lot about the science of reading, talked an awful lot about some other programs that have been funded. So really more of a progress report than an ask is what I took from it.
Do you support his plan to help more families afford child care through the Child Care Choice Voucher Program for Ohio families that earn up to 200% of the federal poverty level?
Well, I know the comments of the speaker were aired before I came on, and I think that's really what it comes down to, is it's really easy to say this is a good program, we should want to do it, but really it comes down to how well we can afford it in light of all the other investment priorities we have in the budget, in light of all the mandatory spending that we have in other portions of the budget. And so outside the context of an actual budget conversation, it's hard to say whether we would be able to get something like that done or not.
Now, he did call on the legislature to ban vapes and flavored tobacco products statewide with a uniform state law. What's your position on that?
I would be against that. And this is something where I respectfully disagree with the governor. The legislature has already acted to overturn the governor's veto as it concerned the local regulation of flavored tobacco and the bans of those as recently as this past calendar year. As well, I think when you look at what Ohioans want in the passage of Issue 2, they want the ability to access products that are a little bit more specialized, a little bit more unique, sometimes products that haven't traditionally been available in the state of Ohio. And banning flavored tobacco products, I think, would be against what they would more than likely want to see happen in the state of Ohio.
Now, as you mentioned, too, is that he focused a lot on, you know, safety and well-being of children. And one of those things that he's been talking about, he had a roundtable on it, was about cell phone use, smartphone use in our schools. Do you think the state should get involved with restricting smartphone use by students while in school?
I think it's something that's very worthy of a conversation. To be honest with you, you know, there are many of us who grew up without smartphones. There are many of us who didn't have smartphones until we were grown adults. And so we're now just beginning to see the effects it's having on kids who maybe grew up with them in their adolescence, in their youth. And I believe the results are kind of troubling. The results are very concerning. The mental health impact and the addictive nature of smartphones that it has on many kids through the most developmental years of their lives. And so the research is becoming more and more clear. And as a result, we need to take a look at that and decide if it is worthwhile for us to say, no, while you are in the four walls of your school building, you need to be focusing on learning. You need to be focusing on your educational experience. not on cell phone usage.
So you think that the state should play a role and not leave that up, as you know, is often talked about, with local control, district to district?
Well, the details are really what's going to matter. I know there are some districts who will tell you they realize that the phones are pretty prevalent within the four walls of their buildings, and so they're trying to use those phones in the instructional process. They're trying to encourage students to use those phones throughout the day insofar as their lesson plans are concerned. And so there's a way to, in some cases, to parlay it into the actual teaching experience. But in many other instances, these phones are nothing more than a distraction, and it's causing many other negative impacts on our youth that we really at least should have the conversation. The details of something like this will be very important. But we really should have this type of conversation.
Now, not in the state of the state, but something that came out of the House, the bill that would mandate that students could use only the bathroom that matches their sex assigned at birth, just passed out of a House committee. If it makes it to the Senate, do you support it or oppose it?
I would support this type of legislation. To be honest with you, the lens I look at is that it's not as much about the individual who wants to use the opposite bathroom from their sex assigned at birth, but more so the people who are already in that bathroom who are using it, who are counting on us to make sure that they're comfortable using that bathroom. That's the lens I look at this. And it's all the primarily in this case, it's going to be the young girls who are in our school systems who are going to expect that we keep people out who may be making them uncomfortable, who may be in some cases posing some risks to them in their own individual daily lives and experience. And I think that's the lens we need to look at this through.
The Indian Lake area, you know, of course, that was devastated by a tornado a few weeks ago. Do you anticipate a plan soon from the state to provide some financial help for the people affected by those destructive tornadoes?
I do. So the controlling board, the governor, through his own appropriation authority, or not really appropriation authority, but being able to move money around within line items, has requested the controlling board release some emergency funding for Indian Lake already. There have been conversations. I know I can speak personally. I spoke with the governor. I know he's spoken with the president of the Senate as well. And I believe he's had conversations with the House as well about trying to figure out what the dollar amount is, what dollar amount we might be able to appropriate to help those people out, particularly those who lost everything. You were up there, Doug. Mm-hmm. Those people who didn't have insurance. Those people who, maybe lived in a mobile home that is now completely totaled, completely lost, and really have no place to go. And so some temporary relief is I think, the near-term conversation we're going to have. But even beyond that, also the near-term, is what kind of relief we can offer for people who really have lost next to everything in their lives as far as their possessions are concerned.
And I understand the governor had said something like maybe there's going to be a meeting next week to kind of really tie this up. But he had mentioned the possibility of grants, you know, get cash to help people get restarted. What do you think of that kind of that, immediate infusion into their pockets?
Well, the details will matter. We haven't gotten too deep into some of those details. I do know this. Indian Lake in particular has had a few bad years of luck. I mean, they had some weed problems in their lake that have really caused a dip in the tourism industry, which is where those businesses and those individuals really make their money. And then this came through, which is also concerning. So we've assured to the people at Indian Lake, we need to do what we can to make sure the cleanup efforts are taken care of and to make sure that the lake can return to normal as soon as possible. People, especially in the Columbus area, who I know go to Indian Lake, need to realize the lake is still going to be boatable. There are still a number of businesses that are going to be able to be open and that are open. There are still a number of lodging options that through short-term rentals that I'm sure are still going to be available. It's going to be different, but the tourism season is still going to be able to happen at Indian Lake this summer, albeit a little bit different than years before.
Senator Rob McCauley of Napoleon, thank you so much for your time this morning and for being on Face the State.
Thanks, Doug. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, when we come back on Face the State, we'll go across the aisle for House Minority Leader Alison Russo's takeaways from the governor's State of the State address, what the Democratic caucuses like and don't like about it.
A tree can be a warrior, battling global challenges with greater courage. A tree can be a solution, cleaning our air, supporting our communities, and protecting our wildlife. A tree can be noble, growing hope in every corner of the world. That's why now is the time for trees. Millions of trees. Join our planting movement at arborday.org.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's more from Face the State, courtesy of 10TV.
Today we're focusing on the governor's proposals for children in his State of the State address and response to those proposals from Republicans and Democrats. Joining me now is House Minority Leader Allison Russo of Upper Arlington. Leader Russo, thanks for being here today.
Thanks, Doug. Always glad to be here.
I appreciate it. As I asked Senator McCauley, first of all, just what is your primary takeaway from the governor's address?
Well, I think certainly I appreciated the governor centering his State of the State on children. I think there are a lot of areas for agreement. And always have been, frankly, with Governor DeWine. But I think also not acknowledging the realities of the current political landscape in the State House, which has been mired by extremism, corruption scandals, and really dysfunction that keeps us from moving forward on these issues that are important to our families, to our children, to our communities, and instead focused on real culture war issues that aren't addressing the needs of everyday Ohioans.
You and Leader Antonio in the Senate talked the other day about the importance of child care eligibility for subsidies to help more families. The governor did talk about the child care choice voucher program for Ohio families that earn up to 200% of the poverty level. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, I'm a huge proponent of more state investment in child care because I think it's a critical need for not only our families, but also key to meeting some of our workforce needs and getting our economy back on track. I certainly support more state investment into the child care sector, but the reality is the reason that we have money for the governor to be able to put that on the table is because we have underspent chronically from the federal dollars that we have available to address this issue, and we're getting direct grants from the Biden administration to address this issue that, frankly, have taken too long to get out the door. So essentially, we're doing catch-up with this program because of our mismanagement and the state government's mismanagement on this issue.
And you'd like to see the eligibility standards loosened.
Absolutely.
Right?
We are ranked at the bottom for eligibility for child care vouchers for some of our lower income families. And we used to be at the top of investment in this space. So we absolutely need to expand that eligibility, but we also have to be investing dollars into building capacity in more facilities, paying our providers a living wage. And so there are a number of things that need to be done. This will help. But the reason that we have this money in the first place is because it was mismanaged and underspent to begin with.
He called on the legislature to ban vapes and flavored tobacco products. Do you support or oppose that idea?
So I have been consistently supportive of those bans. Did not support overruling the governor's veto of some of the budget language related to this. I mean, the reality is smokeless flavored tobacco is a leading risk factor for death and morbidity in this state. I think that it is a good public health policy.
Also, in his part of the State of the State address, or not in the State of the State address, but there's that bill that came out that would mandate that students could only use the bathroom that matches their sex assigned at birth. It's just got out of House committee. Where do you stand on that? I know that the Democratic caucuses have been strongly opposed to legislation
So we are opposed. And listen, Doug, I mean, this is one more example of we aren't addressing, you know, the property taxes that seniors are facing, that they're worried about not being able to be in their homes. We're not addressing things like food insecurity in our communities. We're not addressing gun violence in our communities when our police chiefs and our mayors are asking us to deal with this issue. I could go on and on. Why are we focused on this ban, which, by the way, also includes telling adults which bathrooms that they need to use instead of addressing the real needs of everyday Ohioans? And this is just one more example of the culture wars that distract us from doing the work of the people.
Do you think that the state should get involved with restricting smartphone use in our school classrooms?
Well, it was an interesting proposal by the governor. I certainly, as a parent myself, have concerns in this area. But I also believe very strongly that this is where our schools, our school boards are best equipped to navigate policies that reflect both what parents want in those communities and what the needs are of students and school buildings. I'm very hesitant at this point to do a one-size-fits-all from the state legislature, but certainly open to the conversation. I think it's a good conversation to have, but I also want to be able to make sure that our communities and our parents and our communities are able to make those decisions.
Overall, then, you support the local control aspect of
that. I do absolutely support local control.
I know that you do not represent the parts of Ohio that were hit by tornadoes, but in leadership, have you been part of the discussion, or do you know the status of where that is to help the people of areas like Indian Lake that were so devastated in terms of getting them state financial aid as quickly as possible?
Yeah, so certainly, you know, we do want to get money out the door to those communities as quickly as possible. We do have money available through a couple of different funds that we can address this, certainly through the legislature. You know, the question is the legislature and the supermajority that's in control of the legislature, are they going to set aside the dysfunction in the partisan infighting and put people first and get this money out the door to those communities as well as many other communities? You know, we've got lots of projects, capital projects, transformational projects that we've got money right now ready to go out the door, and the dysfunction in the legislature is holding that up. And those communities that have been hit by the tornadoes, that's just one more example of that.
Yeah, and Senator McCauley, and as well as the governor, has said about urgency. Mm-hmm. And I believe President Huffman also represents part of that area, too. And it's just about, you know, getting it out so people can get back on their feet.
That's right. And it's important. And you know, the people on the ground, they don't care about the infighting that's happening within the supermajority. They need relief now. And so we should treat it with that urgency in the legislature.
I want to ask, too, just about the future. The governor laid out his priorities and, you know, some vision for the next, you know, going ahead in the General Assembly. For the Democratic caucuses in the House and Senate, is there a top priority in the coming months?
Well, there are a lot of priorities because there's a lot of work that hasn't been done. And I think first and foremost, you know, we're hearing from our residents about the burden of property taxes. And that is something that we need to address. We're going to continue to put people first before the politics, we as Democrats, and, you know, remain as laser focused on those issues that we know are meaningful to our residents and to our citizens. Put our focus on that as much as possible.
Lita Russo, thank you so much for your time today. You're always welcome here at Face the State. Thank you.
Thanks, Doug.
Ohio lawmakers are considering using nitrogen gas as an alternative way to execute prisoners on death row. House Bill 392 would require nitrogen hypoxia for executions if lethal injection drugs are not available. The bill had its first hearing last week. Ohio hasn't executed anyone since 2018. In 2020, Governor Mike DeWine said lethal injection was no longer an option after a federal judge says it could cause inmates severe pain and needless suffering. 119 Ohio inmates currently sit on death row. A report released last week found out of the 341 death sentences handed down since 1981, only 56 sentences have been carried out. The bill's sponsors say nitrogen hypoxia is a necessary alternative method.
But we're trying to address the situation as we find it, which is we are not carrying out the law. We are not doing what we, you know, raised our hand and said we would do.
Now, if we're going to use gas, which, frankly, our veterinarians will not use on our animals, why would we use that on human beings?
Nitrogen hypoxia was first used as a method of execution in Alabama this January. According to a 2021 capital crimes report from the Attorney General's office, the average time an inmate spends on death row in Ohio is more than 20 years. Governor DeWine recently said he doesn't see an appetite in the General Assembly to change the method of execution. Again, no one has been put to death in Ohio since he took office.
Again, that's Doug Petcash, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10 TV, from the Sunday morning public affairs program Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10 TV. This has been Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan, heard each Sunday morning at 6 on WBNS AM 1460 ESPN Columbus, and Sunday mornings at 7 on WBNS FM, Sports Radio 97.1 The Fan.